You know, you can find Chinook and coho salmon in some Wisconsin waters and in Lake Michigan, and there are Atlantic salmon farms here in the state. But there is also a Wisconsin fisherman who catches wild sockeye salmon in Alaska, and he sells them in Wisconsin. And he's with us to talk about that today, Larry Mueller here, and our guest, Lucas Ferber, a Bristol Bay, Alaska sockeye salmon fisherman and owner of Wild Source Fisherman Direct Salmon. He's based in Eagle River and with us to talk about sustainable and traceable wild salmon. At noon today, we'll talk about the challenges of protecting our wetlands with Paul Burns, a U.S. Forest Service fisheries biologist, and Katie Belfas from the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. But first, let's talk about salmon. Do you eat salmon? If so, do you know where the salmon you buy comes from? Do you know the difference between wild-caught and farmed salmon? Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. Lucas Ferber, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on, Larry. Appreciate it.
You're from Wisconsin, but you started fishing for salmon in Alaska, I think it was 9 years ago. What got you started on that?
I'll kind of give you the condensed version a little bit, but I was, I was in my last year of college and met an individual who had been fishing in Bristol Bay and told me about salmon fishing in Alaska. He had been doing it for over 20 years. And he offered me a job, and being that I was just graduating and kind of, you know, looking for a little adventure before I started my career at the time, I kind of decided to go with him and quickly realized that it quickly became a passion for me.
Well, it's pretty cool. The sockeye salmon season in Bristol Bay, Alaska, which is kind of the premier place, Bristol Bay, Alaska, for sockeye, it's a short season, pretty strictly regulated. Describe the commercial fishing season scene there for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So the season is really about 6 weeks long, but of that, you're really fishing for 3 to 4 weeks is when the peak of the run is. And that's in kind of the whole month of July is when we're really fishing hard. But we go up usually around the second week of June to a little community not accessible by road in the Bristol Bay area called Naknek, Alaska. And that's where a lot of fishermen in Bristol Bay keep their fishing boats stored over the winter. And so we go up, get our gear ready for the boat, get, some final maintenance done on the boat, and then put the boat in the water and kind of wait for the fish to show up. And so it's a really, like I said, it's a really small remote community. And it's kind of has like a family vibe up there. All the fishermen, it's really a tight knit community. And so it's a lot of fun.
You know, I read somewhere that there's something like 2,000 small boats fishing in Bristol Bay, maybe 12,000 people actually doing the fishing in those boats. And I thought, gosh, that's a lot of boats to be out there. But then I looked up online the size of Bristol Bay, and yeah. I've forgotten the. It's about 250 miles long.
Yeah, it's huge. It's part of the Bering Sea, and it's we fish the headwaters of six major river drainages, and there's 30 million acres is Bristol Bay is composed of 30 million acres of drainage, so it's a huge area. We're not offshore that far, so you are around a lot of boats when you're out there fishing, and I think. When you hear, 2,000 boats, which is a little bit more than there actually are, there's about 1,200 boats fishing out there. You kind of assume that it's like this huge thing, but it's hard to really wrap your mind around how abundant the sockeye salmon are in Bristol Bay. It's a huge fishery. 60% on average of the world's sockeye salmon supply comes from Bristol Bay commercial fishermen. And so that it doesn't feel like there's that many boats out there, and it doesn't feel like you're, when you really understand the scope of Bristol Bay.
Well, yeah, at 250 miles long and 180 miles wide at the at its mouth, it's there's a lot of room out there. And the crew itself, now, correct me if I'm wrong in this, but I've heard that the crews typically work for a percentage of the take. Is that how it works?
Correct, yep. A percentage, you know, usually around, you know, starting out about 5%, and then, you know, as you continue working up and getting more experience and tasked with, you know, more responsibilities, you can earn a little bit more. But yeah, it's really uncertain for people going up there, because at the end of the day, it is fishing, right? And so, you know, breakdowns happen, and, you know, fishing can be good or it can be bad on a certain day, or if you're not in the right place at the right time, you might not do well. So there's a lot of variability in that too, and risk involved.
And you were talking about what, something like 60% of the world sockeye fish come out of Bristol Bay. And I read somewhere with something like 40 million sockeye salmon return to this watershed every year at about that time.
Yeah, on average. And there's, you know, 2 years ago, almost 70 million fish returned.
Wow.
And so since I've been fishing, I've kind of been fortunate. Bristol Bay has really boomed in the last 10 years. We're having some of the biggest runs ever, which is awesome to see. And so I think, yeah, last year, I think you're correct. The total run, I believe, was close to 40 or 50 million, I think. And the harvest, the number of fish harvested was 40 million.
That's an amazing number. And are there a lot of guys like you? Well, I know not a lot of guys from Wisconsin like you, but I mean, do people come from all over the people in those 2,000 boats? Or are they mostly Alaskan natives?
No, there's a portion of Alaskan natives that fish out there. I would say the majority are from the lower 48, but all over the world. And then you got to also remember there's all that fish has to be processed and packed and shipped down to the lower 48 or distributed all around the world. So there's people from all walks of life that are up there, you know, engaged in the processing and all of the other logistics involved in getting that salmon out to market.
Is there any thought, or has there been any speculation on why over the last many years the number has increased so well?
You know, there's a lot of speculation. Salmon, just in general, I think there's it's kind of interesting. It's still really a mystery to us, you know. But there is a lot of data to support the fact. You know, the drainage itself is pristine, untouched. I mean, there's really no human development in Bristol Bay besides just little villages sprinkled here and there. There are no dams. There's no logging operations that can be harmful to salmon runs. And so, you know, I think just the how pristine the ecosystem is has really led to these, and careful management too by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has allowed these runs to really thrive.
Yeah. So what is, does the Alaska Fish and Game, how do they regulate, or how do they work on the salmon fishery?
Yeah, so it's really highly regulated fishery. So when Alaska applied for statehood and they wrote their constitution, they wrote sustainable fishing into their constitution. And so Alaska is really regarded around the world as having some of the best fisheries and the best managed fisheries in all the world. And in Bristol Bay in particular, the number of boats that are permitted to fish in Bristol Bay are limited. So there's a cap on the number of permits that they allow for fishing. The size of our boats is regulated. Our boats are 32 feet long. That's the max, which if you consider, that's not a whole lot longer than some of the walleye boats fishing in Green Bay, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are small boats that we live on. And so, you know, and the type of gill net that we use, the size is restricted to eliminate bycatch. But also, and maybe most important, Alaska Fishing Game employs fishery biologists, and they're really the ones that have the power to tell us when we can go fish and tell us that we can't fish if that's the case. And so what they do is they carefully manage and they have goals for each of the river systems for how many fish they want to escape up the river to spawn. And so it's called an escapement model, where they set a goal for a particular river, and they monitor that via, in some cases, sonar, fish sonar, to count the number of fish that are passing through a certain point. And then also, which is kind of cool, they have fish count towers where people will be in a tower on the bank of the river, and at certain intervals, they'll literally count the number of fish that are passing by. So there's really no guesswork. They know how many fish are going up the river to spawn to maintain those strong runs.
You mentioned gill nets and you said something about size, but the fish are taken with gill nets. So what's the, are you scooping up a lot of other fish unintentionally, I guess is my question.
No, and it's kind of what I was getting at. There's the gill nets, and if you're people not familiar with gill net fishing, essentially it's a net that hangs in the water column. It floats on the surface and hangs in the water column maybe 8 feet, right? And there's all little individual, kind of like a diamond grid pattern in the net, that is a particular size that only targets the species that we're going after, which is sockeye salmon. So there's virtually zero bycatch that we have in that fishery in particular. And so it's something where, you know, I think commercial fishing has kind of been under attack in the last couple of years, documentaries and things I've read about. And some of that's fair, you know. I guess my message would be that not all commercial fishing is created equal. There are methods of harvest that are more dangerous, that involve a lot of bycatch, that can deplete other stocks of fish. And so that's something to consider as well. Being a fisherman in Bristol Bay, I sleep great at night. I know that it's really regarded as like the gold standard for sustainable fishing in the world.
Yeah, and the fish are really good. they taste really, really good. You know, I kind of like, or I do like about the whole operation is there's not some conglomerate. Some big company that sends out 1,000 boats. It sounds to me like you've got about 1,200 small entrepreneurs. I don't know how exactly to put it, but
it's a family ordeal for the most part. You know, these are people that have been Bristol Bay's been commercial fishing for 140 years. We have a history of fishing commercially, all the way back to fishing in wooden sailboats up until the 1950s. It's really a tight-knit, like small family-run businesses that fish and in some cases take their fish to market and direct market their fish down the lower 48 and all over.
Yeah. Well, you sell the salmon you catch to a processor? Or what happens to those fish and so forth?
Yeah, so we catch the fish, and then we basically have a contract with a processor based in Seattle, we sell them our fish, right? They take that fish, process it, they debone it, they flash freeze it, which is important in maintaining the quality, and freezer seal it, and then they distribute that all over, you know, all of their deals with grocery stores, big grocery store chains all over the world. And so they have a fleet buyback program where fishermen can have access to premium grade sockeye to take to market on their own. And so that's what I do.
And so that's your business, Wild Source Fisherman Direct Salmon. Is that that's the name of your operation?
Yeah.
So talk about that. Just talk about that whole process.
Well, sure. So Wild Source Salmon, I've been fishing there for, I guess this would be my 9th year. And I always was able to bring a little bit of fish home and share it with friends and family. And I mean, they were always begging me, you know, hey, can you get more? Can you get more? Can you get more? And I started to think about how great of an opportunity I had in having access to this fish. And just walking around the grocery store, you just don't really have that access or the connection to the person actually going out there and doing it. And so I thought, I can do this and provide kind of that face-to-face connection to, you know, a person that's actually going up there and participating in the operation and knows the details and can share that. And so I started Wild Source Salmon 4 years ago, and basically I take pre-orders in the spring before I go fishing. And I'm based in northern Wisconsin, but I have customers in the UP and down in the Fox Valley and things like that too. I go fishing, and then around the end of September, October, I have all the fish come to me. I set a date where people come and pick up their fish, and it all goes out. So that's kind of the way it operates.
So it's you call it traceable.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem with a lot of the seafood that you get in a restaurant or you buy in the grocery store is, on average, when you're buying fish, it's changing hands on average 7 different times, right? So there's just the supply chain can be really murky. And along the way, every time that fish trades hands, you lose information sometimes about, you know, when it was caught, where it was caught, the method in which it was caught. And so, you know, I've attempted to simplify that supply chain by eliminating a lot of the different hands that it would pass through to get to the consumer.
It's and how much salmon do you, well, let's say, how much do you catch compared to how much you bring back to Wisconsin? I suppose it depends on your orders you receive.
It does. I'm averaging about 2,000 pounds of fish a year that I sell. We catch, I guess on average, maybe, you know, 100,000 pounds a year. So it's a very small percentage of our catch that I'm taking to market.
Yeah. Kevin in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing there? Hey, I used to work up there too. Worked there for 5 years in the late 80s and 90s. And I want to stress that everything this guy says about you know, it's being sustainable, all that. I mean, it is really fantastic. So many people fish, and I worked on a native crew, and, you know, the old people have their places to fish, you know, without permits and all that. They can just fish. And, you know, there's this mine they want to put up in the headwaters up there, the Pebble Mine. And I just want to stress that, you know, it's a copper and gold mine. And, you know, if they put that up there, you know, that could really screw up that whole fishery. I mean, it's the best thing for like thousands of people up there and for us when we go up there to work too. So I just wanted to say that, and, you know, just good fishing to you. Okay.
All right, Kevin, thank you for calling. So comment, copper and gold mines in the headwaters.
Yeah. So this has been kind of an issue for, gosh, they've been battling this for over 20 years, but there was a discovery of a major gold and copper discovery at the headwaters of two major river drainages there. The Nooshigak and the Kwajalein River. And so a Canadian company has been exploring and working on the permitting for developing one of the largest open pit mines in Bristol Bay. And so it's a hotly debated topic. I think a lot of progress has been made even in the last couple of years by the EPA and the, you know, what they've found could be detrimental effects to the fishery. And so, you know, it's kind of an ongoing battle, but yeah, no, it's, it's something where I'm not anti-mining by any stretch of the imagination. I know it's something that's important and we use those minerals, but some places are just the wrong place for a mine like that. And this is, it's such a special place, Bristol Bay. It's the last salmon stronghold we have in the world. And all you'd have to do is travel to the place and fly over it and see how intact and pristine it is to realize, like, it just doesn't pass the gut check, you know. It just doesn't feel right to have a mine in that place. And so I think most of the commercial fishermen and the indigenous populations there are very opposed to the development of that mine.
Yeah. So you operate a community supported agriculture model. Basically, people order the fish and you know, at some certain point when you have them, they come and pick them up. Do you have room for more people to be involved in this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am kind of a small fish in a big pond, I guess, when it comes to handling seafood. And so I'm a little bit limited. And part of the challenge too is where I live is access to cold storage and things like that. So I'm operating out of, you know, industrial freezers in my garage, you know, and things like that. So, but I'd really love the opportunity to be able to get wild salmon in the hands of more people if I could. And so I do have some customers from down south that even, you know, have a cabin up here in the Northwoods, and they commit to, you know, when they know what date the pickup is, they'll come up and pick up their fish. And so, you know, I'm particularly based in the Northwoods and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but if people are interested in getting some of this sockeye salmon from me, I guess I would encourage you to go to www.wildsourcesalmon.com, join my subscriber email list at the bottom of the page, and I'll provide some information this spring before I fish on how a group of people from a community could purchase salmon and potentially have a big drop-off date in Madison or Wausau or wherever for folks.
So it's wildsourcesalmon.com is the...
Correct.
And people could go there today if they wanted to and sign up, at least to provide some information to you.
Yeah, I take orders starting May 1st is when I start accepting orders. And sometimes I have excess fish available. This year I'm completely sold out. But you could check back to it after the pre-order sale in, you know, December and see if I have any left to order for immediate, you know, pickup.
Yeah. But it wouldn't hurt to go online right now and take a look at your site.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a lot of information on the website about just Bristol Bay in general, the whole fishing process, you know, the differences between wild and farmed salmon, and just a host of information about wild sockeye salmon from Bristol Bay.
What do you think about the farm-raised salmon? What's your opinion on it?
Yeah, well, my opinion, I guess I'm a little biased, right? But I guess not all farm salmon is created equal. I know there's definitely been progress made. I clearly think wild salmon is superior in texture, flavor, color, and just nutrients. Wild salmon has like half the calories of farm-raised salmon. It has high in omega-3 fatty acids, whereas farm salmon has like a higher ratio of omega-6s, which are the bad ones. It's just a superior product in all ways. I can't think of any positives for it other than access and price, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's, I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, Lucas, and I want to thank you. It sounds like a fascinating job. I know it's a lot of hard work, and there's probably a little danger involved, too, from time to time. You're on a boat, after all.
Correct, yeah. I appreciate you having me on. Before I leave, too, I just want to give people – a couple resources. I encourage you guys to go do some research on Bristol Bay if you have questions. There's a filmmaker, Mark Titus, who has two documentary films out there called The Breach and The Wild. Both of them you can find on YouTube. BristolBaySockeye.org is a great resource for finding fish and learning more. And then also the local Catch Network for finding locally sourced seafood in your area.
And your business, WildSourceSalmon.com. Lucas, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I hope we can get you back and do this again. Thank you. Lucas Ferber, our guest, owner of Wild Source Fisherman Direct Salmon, based in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Great to have him with us. Well, coming up, we're going to take a look at our Wisconsin wetlands. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.